Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit mensteeclinic.com.
It's Kevin Harlan with us on 105.3 The Fan, and a good afternoon to you, sir. How the heck are you?
Oh, it's good to be out with you guys. Thanks. Happy to be on in Dallas. Listen to your station every time I'm down there, so I feel like I'm right at home, but good to be on with you.
Well, we love having you on anytime we can, Kevin, so thank you so much. It's an honor. How'd you like being back in the action in the thick of things last night, calling sports once again for the first time in, what, 20 weeks?
Yeah, a long time. It was fun. I enjoyed it. We miss the fans. I think NFL fans, NFL viewers, people that follow the league are going to notice that right off the bat. What the NBA has done is nothing short of miraculous. I'm just stunned. And with the help of their TV partners, ESPN and TNT, they have constructed basically three different studios to play basketball games in that have an arena-like feel without the fans and trying to improvise. I mean, they're adding something every day to these venues, whether it's more crowd noise or more video boards or less this and more that, whatever it might be. You know, they are really going after it, and they're doing a terrific job. I, if nothing else, the effort and the attempt to do something that's never been done before is just mesmerizing. So I respect the heck out of what the league has done and how they've tried to put together something that will finish what will look like a regular season. And quite honestly, it's going to have a different feel to it, but it may be the purest champion we've ever had, because there will be no travel. There will be no home court advantage. Everything's on a neutral floor. It's like a laboratory. So if you're a good team, well-coached, focused, and prepared and disciplined and all the things you need to be a champion, it's going to show. It will not get shoved aside.
So what's your experience like? How is it different? Are you in like that second stage of bubbled where you can come and go, but you're not having interaction with the people? Are you in a separate spot, closed off? How different is calling games during a bubble than the typical NBA action for you?
Well, you know, it's kind of like all of our society now. Some restaurants are open, some you can sit inside, some you can't. We can't come and go. I mean, us, Turner, ESPN, and all the national writers are all at one hotel, and which has been kind of great because you can see a lot of the people you read and a lot of the people you broadcast with, approaching networks and things, and that's kind of fun. I had dinner with Mike Breen the other night, and so and we never get a chance to get together, so that was so fun and so welcome. But they kind of want us to stay here. They don't want us straying away. We can't get in a car and drive, for instance, further into the park or into Orlando. If we wanted to go to the beach for an afternoon, we can't just pick up, leave, and go. You can't do that. So for Turner, we're tested twice a week. I think the ESPN folks are tested twice a week. Your temperature is taken every time you come in or leave the hotel. There's a shuttle bus that takes you to the arena that you're going to broadcast from. Or work at or cover, but that's kind of it. They really want to, especially when you arrive, you can't leave your hotel room for 48 hours. You got to stay here, get tested, stay here, order room service, and your room is made up twice a week. They don't want a lot of interaction between the housekeeping staff and the people that are staying here. So there is definitely a feel of hey, it's not a lockdown quarantine. You can get out and walk around the golf course if you want to, and there is a golf course, it's right next door. But we don't want you going into the theme park. We don't want you going into a big food court area. We don't want you going to restaurants in the area. You stay here, and so we're all kind of abiding by that. And it's, I don't want to say it's the honor system, but it kind of is. I mean, I don't know how they could track you, but there is a hotline available if you spot somebody else. So if I don't like anybody over at ESPN, by God, I'm going to call that hotline and say, I'm going to screw them up on their broadcast.
Love it.
Kevin, please forgive my ignorance on this one. Are you seated in or near the same place in an arena as you normally would be for the broadcast?
No, they've got us up. So it's like a bigger high school or small college arena. And we're not on the floor. We're up like where the last row in a small college arena or a big high school gym. We're up about that far away, but even and then further back. So we're like on a platform that's set up at kind of the rim of the where the seating would be, and then and we're all in plexiglass cubicles. So it's like a hockey goal judge in the NHL. You see them in back of the net, and they're enclosed in plexiglass. That's how we are. We are enclosed, each of us. I'm in one. The analyst is in the other. The stats guy is. We're all separated by plexiglass. We have plexiglass in front of us that I can reach out and touch if I put my arm out. And then we're up and about 40, 50 rows off the court and back. And so our vantage point is not great. And then below us are all the guys, if you've ever been to a concert and you see that area where they've got the people that control the lights and the sound, it's like a pit, and yeah. They've got all these computer boards around them, all these sound boards that are all lit up and screens. That guy, those people are right below us, and they control the video boards that are 360 around the court for the players and them to feel like they're in something more than just an antiseptic gym. So those people are below us, and then below them is a little staging area where visiting teams, players that aren't playing, that are off, can come to the game and watch if they want to, like fans. And they're all socially distanced and kind of zigzagged in terms of how their seating is placed and folding chairs. And then there's the court, and then the teams are on the other side of the floor. So it's a little bit strange. You're looking through glass, you're off the floor, and you're back. So it's not, you know, what I know, I was long talk with Mike Breen here this afternoon, because we're kind of sharing notes about what we're going through, what we need, trying to help each other as we go through the different games we're broadcasting. And I was telling this morning, I said that the one thing I noticed doing the game last night is you lose the pacing and the momentum of the tempo of doing a game when you're courtside, because you can kind of sense when a guy is going to drive. You can sense when a guy is going to shoot, and that proximity to being at court, you know, at midcourt and courtside is really helpful. I've always kind of taken it for granted, but I won't anymore.
No.
Because you really, it helps feed your pacing as a play-by-play guy. Being back and up and off the floor, you don't get the physical sense and the feel of what a guy may do and stay in the rhythm of the play as easily. It's just a different feel.
It's the great Kevin Harlan with us. Okay, so the next thing I'm curious about, when we hear crowd noise on TV, are you getting that in the arena, or are the players looking at you while you're broadcasting because they're like, Kevin, like, we can hear you, dude. Chill out a little bit. Like, what is the volume situation like?
Yeah.
Well, people say that all the time anyway, whether they can hear me or not. They just know that I'm probably talking and it's a bunch of nonsense coming out. But I think that what they're shooting down toward the court is a completely separate soundtrack than what we've got in our headset. And last night, in fact, I took off the headset and I talked to our audio guy in the truck, and I said, I'm going to need more crowd. I think I told him to give me about 20%, and I'm going to need more of a bed. So when I do a game next week and get on the 13 games in 8-9 days or whatever I'm going to do, I'm going to get more crowd noise in my headset, because what you miss as a broadcaster is kind of that crescendo of the crowd, the orchestra that a crowd is with their voice. So, you know, if you say, here comes LeBron James, and he gets it up, you know, and then you have the crowd kind of fill in on the back of that call, and it kind of is like a symphony for a singer, and we don't have that feel, so that's odd. And I was talking with Mike about this on the phone a couple hours ago. It's weird to kind of navigate something that has been so kind of planted in your broadcasting DNA, and now that is gone, it becomes strange, and you've got to compensate in some way. And I'm still kind of working my way through that. But no, they can't hear us, and they're shooting a different kind of crowd noise onto the floor for the players than what we are getting. And if for whatever reason any of our TV mics would pick up any of that crowd noise that they're giving the players, we would just add that to the crowd noise that I think on the TNT side we're already adding artificially to the broadcast.
Very interesting look inside broadcasting the bubble. This is Kevin Harlan. He was on the call last night in the NBA on TNT, Jeff.
Let me ask you about 2K. How long does it take to record literally everything you could possibly ever say during a video game?
Well, I've done it for 15 years, so they've got weeks, months of my work going back to 2005. So they've kept that. They reuse it in some form or fashion. And on a normal summer, when I'm finished with my playoff assignment with TNT, it usually takes me about a month to 6-7 weeks, and a total of about anywhere between 65 and 85 hours. So we kind of limit it to like 2 hours a day, a couple, 3 days a week. And they have just this year with all the separation and the lack of being able to go into studios, they have set up two separate little home studios for me. One at a summer home that we have up on Lake Michigan, up in Wisconsin, where I'm in a walk-in closet, and they've given me all this equipment that was pretty easy to set up and soundboard. So I'm literally in a closet there doing that in the summer. And if I'm back home, and we live in the Kansas City area, we've got another closet that we have made this kind of small little niche with this little recording studio, headset, screen, and these computer things they've got in front of me that I don't operate. They operate remotely. And then when I do it with, say, Doris Burke or Chris Webber or Greg Anthony or Clark Kellogg or whoever is my analyst on that particular day, I can see them in the monitor. They can see me. And then the guys that engineer this, we have a guy on a farm in New Hampshire who's out in the sticks. We got another guy in San Francisco. There's another person in Washington, D.C., just close to Capitol Hill. There's another person in Boston. And they all are mixing and recording our commentary as we watch the video clips they give us. Sometimes they'll have us talk. They'll put up a topic, talk about, the Shaq era with Miami and the championship, or the Dirk Nowitzki era in Dallas. And they may give us specifics in that topic mode to talk about. And then I can see, say, Doris, and she can see me. Or I can see David Aldridge, and he can see me. And it's really nifty. I mean, it's these guys should not be doing video games. These guys should be, like, curing COVID. Or they should be, like sending men to Mars. Like
problem solvers.
So brilliant, and they're doing video games. And I tell them all the time, I said, isn't there a better use for your brains? Like, for your IQ, should you be doing something else? Like, for mankind and not this video game stuff.
The gamers are loving it, though. That game is outstanding, Kevin Harlan. One of the most
successful
games. Yeah, we're gamers here. And by the way, I am currently broadcasting inside a closet in my house.
Are you? So it's not bad, is it? I mean, when you come out of the closet, you literally are coming out. I mean, it's just but it really is. What is nice about it? It's quiet. Yeah. And if you've got clothes that are hanging in the closet, they serve as a sound barrier, right?
Yeah.
And and sometimes you turn, you put your face right in your suit, it really serves the purpose for what we're all doing.
So you're a Green Bay guy. What are your thoughts on Mike McCarthy? Is this guy going to help take the Cowboys to the next level?
Mike texted me last night during the game. Yeah. We have, in fact, our summer home is right up the shore from where Mike has his summer home on Lake Michigan, up north of Green Bay. And the other day, my daughter and I were in our boat. And we were just, it was a beautiful day, and we were just kind of going down the shore. And, you know, Lake Michigan is a big body of water. I mean, it's like an ocean in the middle of the country. I mean, it's a big, big body of water. So, you know, you look across, you can't see anything but water. But we were going down the shore, and I had been by Mike's house a couple times this summer but never saw him. And sure enough, in the distance, I saw this guy throwing something into the water, and his dog was out there retrieving it. And closer, I go, hey, it's Mike. So I stopped the boat and turned off the engine, and I said, Mike. He goes, hey, what are you doing? I said, I'm enjoying the day. And I go, what are you doing? He goes, I got the kids up. I said, my wife is back in Green Bay, and we're going to head back. And I said, I can't believe we haven't crossed paths this summer. And I said, no. I said, I'll text you when I'm home, because we were far offshore, and I didn't want to get too close. And so that was about 2.5 weeks ago, and I was doing the game last night, and I saw that I had texted him, and then about 2 weeks ago, and then he texted me last night, and I think he probably was watching the game, and so I was just with him, via text last night, and then saw him a couple weeks ago. But he's looking so forward to this. You know, I've said to him before, I say, you know, how many guys in this business can say that they've been a head coach for truly the two most famous franchises in pro football history? I mean, like, if you're the coach of the Green Bay Packers or the coach of the Dallas Cowboys, I mean, like, that's unbelievable. If you do nothing else the rest of your career, you've been the head coach of the Cowboys and the Packers, like the two franchises that have the most respect, the most notoriety of any two in pro football. And he has a big smile on his face, and he knows. I mean, he knows what he's getting into, and I will tell you this, there is not any coach in the NFL that I've ever come across. Maybe Gruden would approach this. There are other head coaches that we talk to that are close to it in terms of maniacal detail and making sure that the guy watching the guy is watching the guy who's watching the guy. Like he is redundancy, he is attention to detail. Nothing will get by him, nothing will escape him. And I'm telling you, that year that he spent away from football and buried in his office, watching tape, talking to football people, visiting camps, talking about the game, learning about what he did and didn't do in Green Bay at the conclusion of that tenure, is only going to make him a better coach for the Cowboys. I thought when it was a slam dunk. I thought you could not hire a better head coach. And I'm telling you, they've had some great coaches come through Dallas, but they've never had a coach who is as locked down and as focused and is into detail and offensive football and quarterback technique and what makes things go and dealing with team and dealing with personnel and handling a coaching staff, like all of it. Like he is a textbook example of, if you're going to hire a coach, what you would get. I just think they've made a brilliant choice.
Well, that is awesome, man. Thank you so much. It's an honor to have your voice and thoughts on our air. Enjoy your time in that bubble, and we look forward to hearing you coming up this football season.
Great to talk with you. Can't wait to get to Dallas. Thanks so much, and have a great weekend.
Thank you, sir. The great Kevin Harland, an unbelievably awesome play-by-play announcer. He says he's going to do 13 games in 8 days. Yeah, he's a Tolo. Mm-hmm. And, wherever we are, if we run into Kevin Harland, it's a big-time objective to get him on the air. Super Bowls, NBA, football, college football, video game talk, he does it all. Home of the Rangers, pregame tonight, 7:30, first pitch, 8 o'clock. Jared Sandler is going to be on the call with David Murphy tonight, then Mark McLemore over the weekend, as two members of the Rangers broadcast production team, including Matt Hicks, test positive. Rod Manfred telling director Tony Clark on Friday that if the sport doesn't do a better job managing the virus, it could shut down for the season, sources telling ESPN. So we got Corona stuff. Here is Jeff with Jeff's and Brian's segment of the day.
All right. Well, I'm going to continue along the baseball theme because the Houston Astros, for me at least, are more sports hateable pretty much by the day, sometimes by the hour.
Number one.
I think their owner's an idiot. So Jim Crane, he did an interview with USA Today, and I'm not sure. I guess if you have enough money to be the primary owner of a sports team, you kind of get your way a lot and you probably hear what you want and you're really confident, I guess. Why would you even do an interview right now if you're Jim Crane? Like, he did an interview with USA Today and he said,
you're frustrated and you're going to get the word out, let people know how we feel. I'm going to have my guys back probably.
Oh, okay. Well, let me give Jim Crane some advice. Next time, don't.
I think that's good advice, Jeff.
I think MLB had a bigger problem than everybody realized. Two other teams were doing things and got caught, but we're the ones that took the bullet. That's the way it works. Now, this is him trying to deflect and blame other teams, but he follows that up immediately in the same sentence with, I'm not trying to blame anyone else. It was our problem. We dealt with it.
Yeah.
So I don't understand. Like, guys, no one's going to be on your side here.
No.
Astro fans are literally the only ones on your side here, and even some of them are smart enough to be like, guys, just shut up. We're really happy we won. It was worth it, but shut up.
I think it's really hard to continue to be quiet in that situation because the people are throwing at you, they're talking about you, and it's like, you know what? Screw it. Let's get after them, you know? Because you can't be like, oh, you're right, I'm sorry. It's not human nature.
Well,
you're prideful
enough,
you're going to be like, you know what? We said our piece. You know what happened? We're not going to, you know, have this happen every day. We're going to fight it.
And I think that's the worst part about what Rob Manfred set this up to be, is he set it up to be exactly what it is, where the first person who gets suspended for throwing at him is the entire world's going to go, oh, sweet, there's the first player suspended in the Astro scandal, and it wasn't an Astro. So that's fun.
Yeah.
Like, that was the way that it was always going to be. And he was talking about people say we had a culture problem. We didn't have a culture problem. We had isolated incidents, even the sign stealing thing. I think everybody was paranoid that everybody was doing it. You had a culture problem. Anybody who knows people that know people inside the Astros organization would tell you the Astros have a culture problem. They would have told you, Brandon Taubman, the former assistant GM, who was screaming at female reporters, thank God we got Osuna, who was a guy that was accused of domestic violence. Like, that's not an isolated incident. That's his character coming to the surface in your locker room in front of tons of people. And if a bunch of reporters hadn't been willing to come out and say what happened, which, by the way, you guys tried to deflect at first, like, nothing would have happened. It would have just been the way it was. Like, the Astros are, I hate them. Sports hate. I sports hate them so much. Just shut up. Be quiet.
Yeah.
Now I remember what I wanted to say, though. But this is the problem with how this was set up. Jim Crane can do this. Jim Crane can come out and be like, look, you know, it wasn't us. Like, sure, we're the ones going down for the rest of the league. We're the ones who are doing, like, and they can say anything they want. And Carlos Correa can come out and say anything he wants. And he can call, or whoever on their team called Joe Kelly an MF, or you can call people whatever you want. Because you're good. You're the cheaters, and you're the protected.
Yeah.
So, like, you can say whatever you want. It's just that nobody can do anything to you, and you're the offender. Oh, it's so bad and awful, and I feel dirty thinking about the Houston Astros.
It would be one thing if they could just keep quiet about it, but they got to keep talking about it.
Right.
You know?
And they can. That's the worst part, is all of them can come out and be like, listen, you know, all these punk-ass pitchers, they want to throw at us because they're upset. Like, we took our punishment, and we're just out here. They're jealous, and they're haters, and they're this. And you can say whatever you want. All it's going to do is make people want to throw at you more, and all that's going to do is get them suspended. So the Astros are just skating along in this little paradise of cheat. And I wish it would be the Rangers, because then we'd have a World Series.
Denial is so powerful. It's so hard to tell when you're in the wrong, because every ounce and fiber in your being is coming to its own defense. In some way, I was misunderstood. We didn't mean to. Everybody else was doing it. You're morally and ethically corrupt, and you lack self-awareness, okay? Congratulations. You're a human being. Sin runs through all of us, and it takes a strong person to stand up and be accountable and be honest about what happened. There's not a lot of those guys right now in Houston. They're starting to pretend like they are the victims. That's pathetic human denial.
Yeah, it's kind of the way it goes. Man who was not in denial. This is something that Jeff and Brian's segment was made for, because I think one of the two of us would really enjoy this story. We had a crocodile attack in Mexico.
Okay.
Dude got bit in the foot.
Just, ouch.
Yeah, he got bit in the foot.
Could go worse, though. No death roll involved there.
You could death roll a foot, couldn't you?
You could.
I mean,
but that would be the lead of the story. Not
yes,
man gets bitten
yeah,
foot, it would
yeah,
be man
yeah.
gets death rolled.
Yeah. So he got just foot snatched. Confusing detail in the story. Newsweek doesn't always do the most in-depth reporting. But it says the crocodile would only release its grip on the man's foot when it was attacked with a machete.
Ooh.
The man, known as Santos, was taken to the health center in a private car after the attack, but due to the extent of his injuries, transferred to the hospital. And that's basically all of the details in the story. So I don't know if that means that this dude got bit in the foot, but happened to have a machete on him, or if there was a random person around that was just like, oh, look, a crocodile attacking a man. Let me unsheath my machete. But I think at this point is just a great time to say, shout out to those of you who are just roaming around by bodies of water with a machete. Because in this case, you know, might have saved a man's life. He didn't have either the time or the presence of mind to go for an eye gouge or to be willing to sacrifice the foot, which is probably what I would do in that scenario. If you bite my foot, I'm going to stomp my other foot on top of your mouth and like, congrats, you got me. But now we're gouging eyes, and we're ending this thing. Like, you got me. This might get amputated, but I got you now, buddy.
Yes. Oh, man, I love how confident you are against nature's apex predators, man. I'm just going to gouge your eye out, 8-foot gator.
Well, he's, you know, he's stuck now. His mouth is occupied. He's closed it, and he has not. He has not put me down for the count. You just got a foot, dude. You're in trouble now, because now you're at my will, you know. Well, now you're in a bad position. I can deal with pain, and I can lose one foot. A part of me has always wanted to have a peg leg. I've thought that's badass forever, ever since reading Treasure Island, probably as a kid. And I don't know if anybody in there even had a peg leg, but I think pirates are cool. I wish I had been born hundreds of years ago so I could sail around and do less nefarious pirating activities than some. Like, I kind of just want to be on one of the boats where they're just looking for buried treasure and stuff. I wouldn't want to get in too many fights or anything.
That's good pirating right there.
Yeah. But I missed that opportunity. So there's a segment.
So based on what I can tell, the confidence comes from you never lost a fight to a human other than, was it Manning at Abilene Christian? Who beat you up?
No, Daniel Manning would have never beat me up. No, that was he was the sweetest man ever. It was a linebacker named Matt something, and then there was a corner named Adam Black who also beat me up a little bit.
Okay.
No, I lose. Yeah, I've lost the vast majority of my physical altercations.
But you beat
at
up
least
a neighbor's
football ones.
You beat up a neighbor's cat once, and you kidnapped a goat.
I didn't kidnap the guy. I've never actually fought an animal. I think that's where my confidence comes from.
Okay, that's what makes it all fill in, though. I was trying to construct that puzzle on how we're so, because I've been bitten by animals before. I think that might explain it. Dude, it is painful. It's like they got 20 little daggers in their mouth, and they're clamping on you, and the last thing you're thinking about is fighting back. It's all about running, getting away.
Well, I think it's tough for you that you're soft, you know?
I'm
just made of tougher stuff.
Let me reset this top story. You know, we've been wondering, when's a Dallas team going to be in the middle of one of these coronavirus stories. And, you know, it's not a Cowboy, it's not a Maverick, it's not a Ranger, but it's a broadcast team, as Jared Sandler is going to be the play-by-play announcer over the weekend. David Murphy tonight. Mark McLemore will be his analyst over the weekend as Matt Hicks tested positive. Eric Nadell out of an abundance of caution. He has tested negative for the virus. But Eric's going to join us actually at 5:20 to talk a little bit about his experience and his decision to not call these games here over the next couple of days. Let's do some pro football, though, Jeff. Here's okay. Kavanaugh with first down.
Oh, you're just going to feed me the rock? I like it. Hey,
take it.
This story is very, very interesting to me. George Kittle and the 49ers are trying to work out a contract extension, right?
Okay.
Best tight end in the league. I'm comfortable saying that, with apologies to Travis Kelce. I think there's a pretty good chance George Kittle is the best blocker and the best receiver at tight end in football. Maybe there's like a guy who never catches the ball who's a better blocker. I don't know. But George Kittle's amazing. He just was seventh on the NFL top 100 list, which is a terrible list, but he is really, really good.
I like to think that George Kittle in his developmental years was busy like bucking hay or wrangling steers, and Travis Kelce was learning all the hot new dances.
Well, played at Iowa, Kittle did, so that makes a lot of sense. And Kelce had a reality show where he was trying to find a girlfriend, so that makes a lot of sense. Adam Silver is reporting – not Adam Silver, Mike Silver. The NBA commissioner is reporting on NFL News. Mike Silver from NFL Network says there's a gap between the 49ers and George Kittle while they're trying to work out a deal. He's scheduled to make like $2 million this year. They're calling it a pretty significant disconnect. The 49ers are saying, hey, yeah, like we're going to reset the tight end market for you. Duh.
Here you
go.
We're
hooking you up, bro.
Here's 5% more.
Yeah, and his camp is like, but like that would be like the same as being the 30th best wide receiver in football, and like he's your best receiver and an awesome blocker, and without him, your team dies. So, no.
Pay the money.
They're trying to figure out the money. Tight end market's very interesting, Gavin. It's been pretty flat since 2014.
Yikes.
Jimmy Graham's 2014 contract has kind of been the standard for tight ends until Austin Hooper just eclipsed it by a little bit in free agency. So if Austin Hooper is worth resetting the market, George Kittle's probably worth doubling Austin Hooper. But they don't have actual numbers that they're putting in here. But $10.5 million is about the top of the tight end market. And George Kittle's worth a little bit more than that. Here is the very interesting part of the story. John Lynch is saying, well, even if we don't get a deal done, Kittle's going to show up and continue to be a great teammate. Mike Silver, though, suggested another strategy is in play, one that could involve threatening to use the opt-out if a deal doesn't come soon.
Wow.
How are your teammates going to look at that? Even reading this story, doesn't it make you – because, like, I'm kind of for, hey, whatever leverage you got, go with it. But isn't that one a little insensitive where you're like, here's the thing, boys. We don't get a deal done, I'm scared of coronavirus. If we do, I'm not.
I like it. New workaround.
You can't like that.
I'm not holding out. No. I'm worried about corona.
The NFL
took all their tools away. They stuck them with the damn franchise tag. You got all this BS. I can be awesome for 3 years, and you're like, we're not paying you because you were a second rounder.
No.
I'm going to use whatever I got.
The NFL did not take away your holdout, and the NFL did not you with the franchise tag.
They sure did.
You agreed to it.
They bribed.
Bargained.
They bought out our best players. That's what they did. They bribed our superstars. We'll give you more money than everybody. Screw the little people. And what do the little people do? Vote in the owner's best interests.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I was reading all the way through here, and I was like, oh, okay, George Kittle contract. Like, that's worth bringing up. And it's the very last line of the story. I don't know how this isn't a massive headline that Mike Silver is basically saying, no, George Kittle's threatening to use the coronavirus opt-out if they don't pay him the way he wants to be paid. That's a monster story.
That is.
It's not the last line of a three-page story. That's the headline.
Yeah.
George Kittle's using coronavirus as a contract negotiation.
Yeah. He took away my ability to hold out. So it's either coronavirus or fake injury. That's all I got. Oh, well, I tell you what, I can see it from George Kittle's perspective. It's like, listen, me risking playing this game where it's obvious the league's going to get shut down at some point, my team's probably going to have to forfeit games. It'd be worth it if you give me what I'm really, really worth.
Okay.
But if we want to keep doing $2 million, that's not worth a Corona season to me.
The teams, if they want to play hardball, would keep winning these, because you would just say, so you want to opt out and then be on the books for $2 million next year?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go for it, champ. Like, mm-hmm. You can't really say that, because you're like, wait, we want to win the Super Bowl. Please play.
But no one player is truly that important. Except the quarterback. Every
yes.
NFL team could do that with a couple of players. Like, that's fine.
Yeah, so I don't – like, they're all empty threats from the player. Like, I won't – but I'm going to be coronavirus scared. Like, do you know how this works, dude? Like,
yeah.
You'll be back here next year even more mad at us because you're still underpaid, because your contract will still be sitting there, you dummy.
Only the Cowboys would convince themselves, you know, that they just had to hang on to – well, we wouldn't have a shot without Zeke. Boy, whoa.
And he's going to sit out the season and not have his contract roll. Yeah, he's going to do that.
Goes for 4.7 yards per carry, 1,300 yards, and you go 8-8. Yeah, what'd that get you? Okay, it is the G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan. Rangers lineup is out. We'll get to that either at the end of this segment or early in the next segment. The top stories of the day coming up at 5 o'clock as they get set to take on the Giants. 8-game suspension announced for Antonio Brown. The details on this are out. There is not finality on it. Okay, the NFL said Brown has been directed to continue counseling and treatment. The league said that any further violations would likely result in harsher discipline. But on top of that, a separate NFL investigation into Brown stemming from a lawsuit filed by his former trainer alleging sexual assault is still ongoing. Brown said the relationship was consensual. He met with the NFL in November as part of that investigation, but he could receive additional games following the conclusion of that investigation, a source telling ESPN's Jeremy Fowler last hour. So it's not over. You could sign the guy. You could have him in practice, and the NFL could come through like in early November and be like, nah, we're acting on this one now.
And there's risk in a lot of ways here, because with Antonio Brown, if nobody signs him, the suspension doesn't start.
Wow.
His suspension starts if you sign him.
Wow.
So missing 8 games of the season as a free agent doesn't count for him. Somebody's going to have to sign him and then let him sit there for 8 weeks and hope that nothing else happens or comes out, or you have a guilty verdict in a civil court case or whatever. But I could still see it. I mean, if you've met with him and you believe, like, he's – I always wonder, as somebody who's done actual therapy voluntarily, when somebody's told, you need to do therapy, like, are they just, like, checking the box?
Yeah,
or are they doing it? And,
yeah.
You know, if you were a team that felt good about the way he's headed and what he's doing, the talent is freaking unbelievable value, whatever you sign him for.
Yeah.
So somebody should do it and be like, yeah, for 8 weeks we're going to sit here and see what happens, and if we're able to have him in week 9 – sweet.
It's a great opportunity to get an all-pro performer. I think he can still be at that level. 49ers, Seahawks, maybe back to the Patriots. I could see Robert Kraft being a forgiving type of guy and, you know, come back around if we have evidence and reason to believe things are going to go a little bit differently. But I don't know how the NFL, with those kind of allegations, doing what they did with Zeke, can't tack on another 6 games. I'd be like, man, we're going to sign him. And he's going to be hit with this other suspension. So I think if I'm an NFL team right now, I'm waiting to see what comes of that. And then if we know, hey, you could sign him, sit him for 14 games, and then have him for week 16 and 17 in the playoffs, it would still be worth it.
Sure. I mean, it's not like he's getting paid for his suspended weeks, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. I'll take him. For how much? Nothing? Cool.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scored!
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.